look at that. My staff of me and a guy has finally got the show up and running. We have just doubled. I've just doubled my headcount recently. The Free Domain has doubled in size recently, and not just because I'm drinking protein shakes. If you work out, do you use supplements? If so, what do you use? I was talking to a friend of mine about one supplement I was using. He's like, dude, that'll give you gout, which is like, have you ever had gout? I never have, but it's apparently the worst thing in the known universe. This is a tough guy, man. He's a tough guy. He used to be in the military and everything, survived ungodly accidents. And he was like, oh, no, gout was by far the worst thing that I ever went through. That was just horrendous. So that's important to know. All right. Somebody got approved for a mortgage and home today. Well, congratulations. If you have a good credit rating and you live in the U.S., you'll be paying an extra $40 a month from here to eternity, because politics is about taking resources from people who've succeeded and giving it to people who've not succeeded in the name of equity. All right. They don't work as well in audio format, though. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't put the last one out in audio format. But some of them do, where I'm doing a lot of reviews of stuff I'm reading or audio that I'm playing. But I wanted, that's why I put in the note for the podcast today that you can go and watch the video here. So, oh my gosh, thank you for the tips, my friends. Thank you for the tips. You know, if this show is going to be mobile, it needs resources. And I still am planning on more documentaries this year. So I appreciate that. Crowder Insights. Do you want the Louder with Crowder Insights? Have you seen the video? Do you want them? Just hit me with a Y. We can talk about anything that you want. Anything that you want. Hit me with a Y if you would like. New Crowder stuff has dropped, by the way, just in case you're wondering. Beepy Boppy says, yesa, yesa. Oh, by the way, I'm going to turn this on. Have you seen the 3-minute one or the 20-second one? Well, I saw the 3-minute plus one. And today, Stephen Crowder put out something about his next plan in the divorce proceedings, which is not good. It's not good. You know, there are people, a lot of people out there in the world who associate always being on the attack with being assertive. And that's not assertive. That's actually kind of suicidal from a victory standpoint. You can't win if you're always on the attack. You know, I mean, you think about, I mean, even if you're invading some country, if you invade too quickly, too long, you have no supply chain, and your soldiers are run out of food. An army marches on its stomach. No, assertiveness can be offensive. It can, but you just can't be offensive all the time. If all you can do is escalate, it's sort of like in racquetball or tennis or pickleball. There's a lot of strategy, right? Otherwise, it would just be whacking balls back and forth, right? So there's a lot of strategy. So you lure the person up to the net, and then you lob it over. You put it in that corner, then you put a drop in the right corner. So you're not constantly on the attack. And what you do is you rush the net trying to get them to lob it, and then you smash it. So no, it's not always just about attack, attack. That's not how you win. I mean, it's how you exhaust yourself, and it's immature. Victory is a dance. Victory is a dance. I think we only got one yes, and that's fine if you don't want to. Obviously, it's your show. We only got one yes for talking more about the Crowder stuff, which is not fundamentally about Crowder, but really about life and conflict. Right. So, yes, we give us some yeses. So, Stephen Crowder put out a statement today, and I'm roughly paraphrasing, where he said, I'm going to petition the court to release everything to do with the marriage and the divorce, including health records, mental health records, and so on. So it looks like maybe he believes or knows that his still wife has mental health issues, and that's going to be broadcast to the world. And oh my God, like, man alive. I do not understand. You know, can I tell you something? Can I tell you guys something? You may not believe me. You may not believe me. You know, I've never had a nasty breakup. Why? Why would you want? I mean, why? You cared for each other once. You loved each other once. if it didn't work out for whatever reason, why would you need to get nasty? I did have a woman threaten me once, you know, with the sort of palimony stuff. But no, it's why? If things don't work out, you move on. You say, whatever, one of us changed. Both of us have changed, but in different directions. We haven't grown together. We've grown apart. We met at one phase in our life. Now we're in a different phase in our life. I'm looking for something else. Things aren't working out. You move on. You know, you can quit a job. That doesn't mean you have to firebomb the place you worked at. Like, I mean, I just find that bizarre. I've never had a nasty breakup. I've never had ugly words and threats. Again, one threat, but it was basically just in passing, and it was just in a moment of frustration. But no, I've never had... I mean, I've had my heart broken once or twice, but I've never had like a nasty breakup. So let's see here. Let's see what you guys were saying. Full transparency might be good. No. When you're breaking up a marriage, man, you should keep it quiet. You know, if I were in that position, I can't imagine it, but if I were in that position, and I think it would be relevant. Sorry. I think it would be relevant if you are telling people about how to live and your Christian values and vows and virtues and marriage and family and parenting. If you are talking about that kind of stuff, or if you are analyzing other people's relationships and looking at other people's sort of hidden texts and messages and so on, right? And I think Crowder did some of that. Then you need your audience to know, right? You need your audience to know. Look, if I can't imagine this either, but you know, if somebody was really into peaceful parenting and their kid had petitioned the court for emancipation, that would be important to tell your audience. So I think you do have to say, I'm getting a divorce. And you say, I'm getting a divorce. It's a very tough time for everyone. I would really appreciate my privacy. I'm not going to talk anymore about it. And that's it. And that's all. You tell people. And then you stop doing the stuff that is involved with talking to other people and trying to analyze other people's relationships or figure out what's right in the world. You're going to have to limit, right? Like if you're a therapist and you're going through a divorce, I don't think you're really allowed to do marital counseling. You have to switch to a different area, right? So you say, I'm going through a divorce. It's a difficult time. I appreciate your sympathy. I'm not happy with it. Enough said, right? As opposed to all of this stuff where they can just divorce you if you want and I chose the wrong person and blah, 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 blah. And then she, I think, released the ring video. I don't know who released it. And then now he's going to go and just rip open everything. And it's just like this kind of escalation. I mean, you can't do that stuff, particularly when you have children. You can say, okay, it's two adults. They're just taking slugs at each other. They're just punching each other, so to speak, in the public square. It's pretty gross. We can look away. But all of this stuff is now going to be out there forever for his children. And parents, when they get into these loggerheads, right? They get into these loggerheads, just pound, pound, pound. Man, the suffering. You're burning up resources that the children need, both emotional, financial, time, everything. The purpose of being a parent is you put your ego aside, you put your immediate preferences aside, and what do? You do what's best for the kids. That's what you do. You do what's best for the kids. That's what you do. And you don't air your dirty laundry out there in the public because your kids are going to have to live with that decision for the rest of their life. I'm glad that I don't know. I mean, I know a couple of stories, but I don't know really the full details of my parents' breakup. I mean, I was a couple of months old at the time. I wouldn't want to know. I wouldn't want all of that stuff burned into my brain, the mental health issues and the this and the that and the finances and the... And what's this fight? What was it going to achieve? What is this fight going to achieve? Nothing. Texas is... a split them up state. Unless you have a prenup, which I doubt they had back in 2011 or 2012 or whenever they married. So they probably don't have a prenup, so it's just 50-50. You can get lawyers making $500 or $1,000 an hour getting you to argue over rugs and lamps and paintings and pictures and photos, and they can get you bent. What does that do? It doesn't matter. It doesn't change the outcome other than the fact that you get a quarter, gets a quarter, and half of it goes to lawyers. And, man, I don't know. Putting out people's medical stuff and mental health stuff into the public sphere. Well, I mean, I did a show this afternoon about how sad all of this is and the fact that Steven Crowder seems to me to significantly advocate for, at least back in 2015, he wrote, and he seemed to significantly advocate for hitting children with belts and with wooden spoons. So that's not good. So I assume because he says, and I have no reason to disagree, he was beaten as a child. He hasn't processed that trauma, so he's volatile and aggressive. Aggression wins, right? Escalation wins. Violence, he considers virtuous in the family. Beliefs have consequences, and I wish I had been able to talk him out of it, but no luck. All right. Let us get to your comments and questions. Funny question, would you say having your mental health detail in the public is worse than posing as nudes for women? Why would I want to? Why would I want to make those comparisons as a whole? And if his wife had, quote, mental health issues, she certainly managed her emotions well while on camera. Well, see, here's the thing when it comes to divorces, isn't it kind of unfair? I'm not talking about this situation in particular, but it's in general. If you, let's say you're a wife and you're looking for dirt in your husband and you kind of rile him up, which is not your, it's his fault to hold his temper. I get all of that, but you still know how to push his buttons. It's one of the things that happens when you're in love and close and you live together is you know where each other's buttons are. So let's say you rile him up and you hit record button on your phone. Now, you know that it's being recorded. Your husband doesn't. And so you can be all like, well, I love you and I care about you and I just want, and you can be all super reasonable. And then your husband is kind of going off the rails. Again, he's totally responsible for his temper, absolutely. But it's not particularly fair if one person is recording and the other person isn't. Now, this was a Ring camera recording, so I assume that they both knew it, but she may have been more aware of it or think about it and so on. So, yeah, it's a very sad situation, and I just, of course, like everyone, my heart breaks for the children involved and the absolute mess that they are inheriting. And, of course, it does really just go to show you, right? It really does go to show you that, you know, Steven Crowder is good-looking guy. He's physically strong. He goes to the gym. He's tall. He's one of the most successful people in alternative media, worth probably tens of millions of dollars. He was scorning $50 million offers. And he seems to have his health, right? Now, he had this issue with his chest, but he seems to have his health. So he's very successful, very wealthy, good-looking, healthy. And now, what's going to happen? All of that, right? He's gotten what most of us would dream of. He's gotten what a lot of people would give their eye teeth for. And what happens now? It's this fundamental lack of thinking things through. What happens now? In relationships, you have to de-escalate. You absolutely have, like, you can just escalate, and then things just blow apart. You have to de-escalate. You have to be vulnerable. You have to let your heart be broken before the end so that your heart doesn't get permanently shattered by the end. You have to be vulnerable. You have to say, I'm terrified about the way things are going. I absolutely do not want to get divorced. Whatever we need to do, whatever I need to do. If you say I've got a temper, I'll go to anger management class. You say I'm not responsible, I will go for therapy and I will figure out what my issues are. I will do all of this. What will happen? He'll reap what he sows? No, that's not what I'm talking about. He will reap what he sows. What will happen to his children? You divorce with children, in general. You divorce with young children, you probably won't be in love ever again. You won't. You won't. I mean, for the women, does a guy, I mean, just think of this, right? Steven Crowder is obviously quite an aggressive guy. From what we've seen, he certainly has aggressive elements. You know, when people are saying this, well, you take your worst 5 minutes and judge you by, no, this is not how people fight. This is like not how people fight. I can't imagine in my wildest dreams saying this stuff to people, to anyone I loved. I can't even imagine saying this to anyone I hated. Like, I really can't imagine. This is not how people fight. This is not normal. This is not the way that relationships work. Well, all couples fight. No, they don't. I'm telling you. My wife and I, maybe one conflict every 6 to 12 months. And a conflict which we usually resolve within an hour that brings us closer together. My daughter, one conflict every 6 to 12 months. No raised voices, no name calling, no aggression, no threats, no violence, no nothing. Just, you know, some frustration and some both people fighting for their position. But no, this is not how people, this is not how healthy people interact with each other. I don't know where people get this idea that this is at all something you should ever permit yourself to do in a personal relationship. It's not a thing. It's not a thing that you'd ever allow yourself to do. It's a funny thing, too, and it's all so controllable. People just are lazy, and they let themselves slide into the snippy, snipey, snarky bullshit. Oh, it's so... Look, you see this kind of couple fight, couple fight, couple fight. You know, and I know for an absolute certainty, my friends, that if someone came, like a census taker came, or somebody to sign you up for the Republican Party, or someone delivered something, or someone had a question, hey, how do I get, you know that these people were like, oh yeah, no, that's fine, yeah, no, I appreciate you sending me the Uber Eats, oh yeah, you know, two lefts and a right, and you can't miss it, they'd be perfectly friendly, perfectly happy. But not to each other, isn't that insane? Isn't that insane? The people are much nicer to strangers than they are to each other. When you have these 1 in 6 months conflicts, is there tension in the room when it occurs? I mean, what do you mean by tension? There's disagreement. There's disagreement. There can be some annoyance. So, you know, you can be annoyed with people. You don't have to say you don't love them and you hate them and you're going to F them up. And like, you don't have to say any of that stuff. Tips for being the best husband? Man, just worship her. Just absolutely love and worship her. Bring out the best in her through your adulation. And make sure she knows that every single day. Every single day. Every single day. I mean, at least a couple of times a week I check in with my family. Anything I can do better? How you guys feeling? Are you enjoying things? And if there's anything that I should do better or anything that annoyed you, please let me know. I'm a service provider. I'm providing love and security and happiness and contentment and protection to my family. I want to know how I'm doing, right? I ask you guys how I'm doing. How am I doing? I put out questionnaires to you guys. How am I doing? Yeah, no, it's just extraordinarily lazy. What happens is... people assume that they have a monopoly, and because they assume they have a monopoly, they get lazy, entitled, and brutish. They turn from a restaurant that desperately wants your business to the Department of Motor Vehicles, where you have to go because they make you go. If you're a public figure and you're consistently nicer to your audience than you are to the woman actually bearing your children, I don't understand where your priorities are. Like, it makes none of this makes any kind of sense to me at all. I mean, I love you guys as an audience, but if I have to choose between quality time with you versus necessary time with my wife, love you guys. It's not even close. I mean, you guys are great and wonderful, and I love you for being here, and I love you for supporting the show, and I'll turn on the subscriber stuff in just a sec. What I'm not understanding is what is the difference between a disagreement and a conflict in those special situations? Well, I mean, a disagreement can lead to a conflict, but a conflict doesn't lead to escalation. A conflict, you can disagree with someone very strongly, very passionately, without disrespecting them as a person, without hating them as an individual, without calling them names or bullying them or putting them down or, ugh, that's gross. And, you know, there are things that you say in a relationship for which there are no mulligans. I mean, you say to the mother of your children, who's like, you say to the mother of your children, I don't love you. No, calling your girlfriend fat. Well, if your girlfriend, if she's fat, you met her when she was fat. Saying she's fat is not great because you already chose her. If your girlfriend was slender and then became fat, that's more on you because you should be telling her at the beginning, right? Like, I hate to say it, but I think you might be gaining some weight. Let's get a scale. Let's sort this out. I might be gaining some weight too because often couples do it together. But, you know, you, if you have a girlfriend, you are responsible for the size of her ass. You got to massage it down with those special Siberian fur gloves. No, you can't call your girlfriend fat because you are responsible for helping her notice if she's gaining weight, right? You can't just say, well, you're fat, like there's some distance thing, right? Like, you should have told her when she was gaining weight and she should have told you, right? It's on you. I mean, obviously it's on her as well, but you can't just, you know, when you're united, you love someone, you can't just be negative towards them, right? All right. Yeah, you can disagree very passionately. I think this. Well, I think this. Well, I don't agree with this. And you contradict yourself there. And you can get quite passionate about it. You don't have to be mean about it. You don't have to be hostile. Don't have to be negative. Don't have to be abusive. You don't have to put people down. You don't have to fundamentally attack their character. You just have a disagreement. That's all there is. You don't go for the person's jugular. You don't go for their spine. You don't attempt to disassemble their soul. You don't smash them down with the proverbial baseball bat to get your way. That's wretched. You can very passionately disagree with someone, but you don't try and nuke their character. I mean, you can do that, but you've just nuked the relationship. Because if you say to someone, you withdraw affection, you dislike them, you may hate them, you don't love them, okay, either that's real, in which case the relationship is over, or that's not real, in which case you're using their need and desire for love as a weapon to harm them, which means that you are a virtually unredeemable brute who needs to beg and crawl for forgiveness for using such a nuclear weapon in a relationship. You don't do ultimatums. You don't do threats. You are in there passionate to resolve the conflict because you want to get the relationship to the next level where you've passed that conflict and have all of that trust of knowing that you can solve these conflicts. You do not attack the characters of people you love. You don't do it. Because then you're saying, I love you, I hate you. That's deranged. That's deranged. You can be very passionate in your disagreement with someone, but you do not attack their foundational character. You're lazy, you're dumb, you don't care about me, you're irresponsible. Oh my God. Look, if that's true, get away from the relationship. If it's not true, then you're just trying to hurt them and bully them and cow them down to kneel before you, which means you're just a terrible person in that moment and maybe more than in that moment. But no, this is absolutely no. In no way, shape, or form do you ever attack the character of someone you claim to care about. Attacking a character is for enemies whose destruction you thirst for. It's just rough. I mean, I've had debates, and I will, in general, I'm not perfect about it, but even if I find the people really repulsive, I will generally go for the arguments, not the character. I will try to avoid the ad hominems. Again, I'm not perfect, but I will try to avoid the ad hominems. Stefan, I love you, I hate you. as you said, it describes my 10-year-long relationship. I've been single for years now. I learned a lot from your talks about myself and why I was with these awful women. Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. See, I love you, I hate you is such a contradiction, right? You can't, it's like going north and south at the same time or up and down at the same time. I love you, I hate you is such a contradiction. It can only come because the way that you've been raised is you get affection when you're doing something that your mom likes. Usually it's your mom, could be your dad, right? Parents, right? Oh, you're doing something I like, I will give you the reward called affection. Ooh, you're doing something I don't like that makes me angry, I will give you the punishment called anger or hatred or whatever, right? So I love you is not a statement of a passionate recognition of the virtues of the person you're saying it to. I love you is a reward mechanism to control someone so they would be more likely to do what you want. Tonight, the night, the light of love is in your eyes. Will you still love me tomorrow? Right? Is the man just saying he loves you to get sex? See, I love you is like Pavlovian. It's, oh, you're doing something I like. I love you. Oh, you bought me something. I love you, right? Oh, I hate you. Why? Because you're doing something that the other person doesn't like. It's not a statement of moral evaluation. It's a stick and a carrot. Oh, good boy. Here's some love. Oh, good boy. Good. Oh, you rolled over. Oh, you bought me some earrings. Oh, good boy. Good boy. Oh, well done. Well done. Pat, pat, pat. I love you. I love you. Good boy, right? Oh, bad boy. You pooped in the corner. You disagreed with me. You lied about where you were going. I dislike you. That's bad. Ooh, rolled up newspaper time. It's punishment and reward. It's nothing to do with love or passion or evaluation. It's just, oh, I like what you're doing. I love. Love, here's a reward. Oh, I don't like what you're doing. Hate, anger, punishment, withdrawal. And if you use love and whatever the opposite is, it could be withdrawal, it could be hatred. If you use love and anti-love as a control mechanism, every time you do that, you step further and further back from actually being able to love someone. Every single time you use that, you use people's hunger to be loved to control them and bully them and try and subjugate them to your will. You are taking an absolute ball-peen hammer to the base of the spine of your capacity to love. Late for the stream. Do I get banned for the rest of the day like Crowder's employees? Yeah, heard about that too. All right. Why should I feel for Crowder's kids? He and his wife clearly don't care enough about them to resolve their marriage conflicts. This is something I've been trying to work through. Why should I stand up to defend kids whose parents don't care about them? I know this is, way of thinking is wrong, arguably evil, but I find it hard to care anymore. Well, I hear what you're saying, and I've talked about this before. I really do try to discipline myself to not care about other people's children more than they do themselves. But it's still hard to see it happen, don't you think? It's still hard to see it happen. And of course, there's nothing you can do, right? There's nothing you can do. You're just like you're watching a crime that you can't do anything about. Like, why would you want to do that? All right. Well, I'm happy to talk about whatever is on your mind. And I'm going to turn this over to supporters only now. Let me just post the link here, just on the off chance you're not a supporter. Here is a link that you can go to where you can sign up for free. Right there. freedomain.locals.com/support/promo/allcaps UBB 2022. And you can sign that up for a free month. Just see it. It's a great community. See what you like. Do you have any pets, Steph? What are my pets? Come on, everybody knows. What are my pets? I have five of them. What pets do I have? Come on. My wife imitating those ducks is absolutely hilarious. She is the funniest duck imitator. It just is absolutely, because she gets all of their entire, I'm like, is that the ducks or just me when I'm hungry? Yes, I have. Well, my daughter has them, and they're a lot of fun. They're a lot of fun. They're really strong personalities and very, very interesting. And they're not very big on diversity. We have more than one kind of duck, and they're pretty tribal. Pretty tribal. Oh, when I was a kid, I had hamsters, I had mice, and loved them. And I never had any rats. I bred hamsters and sold them back to the pet store. And what else? I mean, I had relatives who had dogs, always loved dogs, but lived in small apartments, couldn't really have dogs. And then I had, in high school, I had a parakeet named Laura, after the sister in the Glass Menagerie, and loved Laura. She was a very, very cute bird, would come and sit and nestle against my hair, and just a lovely, lovely animal. And then when I went to go and work up north, I had to give her to a friend of mine who took really good care of her. Just a lovely, a pet great white shark. Actually, great white sharks don't do anything in captivity. They just, they die. They simply can't, like, otherwise they'd be all over the place in aquariums, right? But they don't, great white sharks don't. I mean, I know you're not serious, obviously, but. And I, when I was in my graduate school program, I lived with four gay guys and a lesbian in a very exciting tour of gay and lesbian culture. And they had a couple of cats, and one of the cats had been weaned really early. And I told this story many years ago, but I remember falling asleep. You know, that seduction that you do when you're reading a book that you kind of have to read for school, and you say, oh, I'm going to lie on my side and going to read for a bit. I'm just going to read through one eye. I'm just going to close my eyes. Right. And I woke up. I had this wild dream. And then I woke up with the cat sucking on my earlobe because it had been weaned too early and was looking for a nipple. And it was unfortunately quite disappointed. It got a little bit of floss. I just realized the other day I had this long hair growing out the top of my ear. The joys of being in your 50s. Mm. You could have a pet shark. Yeah, you can have pet sharks in your office. You can domesticate nurse sharks and other sort of more sedate sharks, but great whites don't do captivity. You can even do a blue shark, maybe I don't think tiger sharks, mako shark maybe, but you can't do the big predators. You can't, and certainly not great whites. They don't want to do it. All right, let's go to supporters only. Dogfish, sand shark, yeah, for sure. I've swum with sharks in the past. Where was I? Either Florida or California. I've swum with sharks. I mean, just like pretty harmless sharks and earth sharks and so on. And I think they're great. I would be interested in doing sharks in a tank. It would be pretty wild because I really do think that they're amazing creatures. They're not as gay and subservient as dolphins. There's a line from Glee. Dolphins, aren't they just gay sharks? That's kind of funny. All right, let's get to your questions, my friend. How do you feel about tech implants, simple as a pacemaker up to a brain chip AI? Well, I mean, a pacemaker is good. I mean, it helps you regulate your heart rate, I assume. I would not want to mess with my brain at all. I would not want to take supplements for my brain. I would not want to do anything like that. I think that would be just wretched. I'm obviously very happy with the way my brain functions, and I do not want to do anything like that. Pet piranhas. Now, what was it? Adam Kokesh had these big giant dogs many years ago. I don't know what he has now. I don't know what he's doing now, but yeah, I always have a bit of suspicion where people have these big hyper macho animals, you know, my pit bulls, and it's like, yeah, we get it. You're a tough guy. Ooh, so tough. You know, it's just a real. It's just a ridiculous cliche, you know, like Paris Hilton with her hobbit dog in a purse and stuff like that. Yep. Just terrible. How about for the general public, considering me general average? Well, I don't know, like, if this is the Flowers for Algernon question, like, if you could do a tech implant to significantly increase your IQ, would you? Don't know, man. I don't know. You've adapted to a particular way of life. You've got a particular social circle. You've got a romantic circle. You've got a friend circle, all of which is largely predicated on some similarities in IQ. Because, you know, once you start to get two standard deviations, unless you're very skilled, it's really hard to communicate more than two standard deviations, which is why I'm so appreciative of the intelligence of this audience that I really don't have to dumb anything down. So, I think that I would very much hesitate to do that. And if you've got a whole history of who you are and what you're capable of, and then you really, really change it, I wouldn't go. If I was in your shoes, let's say just of average intelligence, you know, the Caucasian 100, right? Like the real middle of the road intelligence. Nothing wrong with that. Perfectly fabulous way to live, and you can have a great, happy, virtuous life. What I would do if I were in your shoes is I wouldn't try and crank up my IQ, whatever that might mean, and however weird and dangerous that might be. What I would do is I would up my wisdom, right? Cranking up intelligence is far less important than cranking up wisdom. Like, I can't change anyone's IQ. I hopefully can move the needle when it comes to wisdom with you guys and everyone. So, and here's the thing, you would end up lonely because your social skills and everything in your social circle is developed in some degree, to some degree, around the cluster that your IQ is, around the sort of middle of the bell curve, wherever you are. And so if you move two standard deviations, you can't really talk to the new people because it's new for you. You can't really talk to the old people because you've moved beyond them. And where are you going to be? What are you going to do? I don't know. What are your thoughts about parents who give up children for adoption and then try to reconnect with them as adults? I'm not a fan of that, actually. I'm not a fan of that. I don't have some big moral argument about it. I think if you give your kids up for adoption, I think it's fine if you want to register with some place where if your kids want to contact you, that's fine, right? If your kids want to contact you, and they may want to do so, it's really important to know the history, the medical history of your biological parents, because that's going to have some effect on how your health is going to play out. But parents who like come in and find their kids and so on, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. I'm not a big fan of that. It's very discombobulating for the kids. And, you know, giving up kids for adoption as a whole is, I mean, it's such a failure. You know, we could all imagine some extraordinary circumstance and so on, but that's not the majority of it. Majority of it is just some wild irresponsibility with procreation, being with the wrong person, drugs, alcohol, whatever it's going to be. It's just such a horrifying error that I think you want to let that stuff lie, let those sleeping dogs lie. In my opinion, again, I've not been through this. I'm just telling you. I've known a number of people who've actually, one of my very good friends was adopted. I've known a number of people who were adopted, and a few of them have had people try and contact them later on, and it throws their life into turmoil. And I've not known anything particularly great that comes out of it. I mean, what are you really going to say to the mother who gave you away? What are you going to say to that person? Thank you. Well, the only way that you'd thank someone for giving you away is if their life was such an unbelievable mess that how could you respect them? What would they have to offer you? Hey, I gave birth to you and gave you away. I mean, what are you going to say? What do you think about the Chinese breeding high IQ kids? Yeah, well, I mean, they're trying to get more and more intelligent kids, and it seems like the West is not quite following that program, to put it mildly. China is demographically, no one knows how to reverse demographic decline. I mean, I know they're trying in Hungary. You have four kids, you never have to pay income tax again, but they've managed to slow the decline, I think, but nobody knows how to reverse it in particular. The way that you would, I mean, people have fewer and fewer kids because taxes and expenses go up through the roof. And the only way that you'd be able to stimulate a baby boom is to hugely eliminate taxes so that all of the boomers who are retiring leave empty houses. The price of housing goes down like 300%, which it should, 400% or 1,000% maybe, right? And then houses are so cheap that people can afford to have bigger families again. But governments, because people don't understand economics, and we've completely lost the idea of sacrificing our own interests for the sake of society as a whole, because society is not usually something you can respect, because society has now become so intertwined with government power that people resent any kind of sacrifice. But yeah, the only way that you are able to reverse birth declines is to let real estate fall hugely. But you can't let real estate fall hugely because that destroys your entire house of cards economy, as we saw in 07, 08, and as we think we're beginning to see now. I was reading the other day, man. Phew. There are 2 real estate agents in America for every 1 house for sale. Again, I'm not verified. I read that. Don't know if it's true or not, but it's probably not far off, even if it's not totally accurate. Do you think that the low IQ children born just before the pandemic will have some negative legacy in the future as they mature and enter society many years from now? No, it doesn't seem to be the case. There were studies from Dutch children who were virtually starved to death in the Second World War, and when they got food, they ended up, even if they were physically shorter, they ended up with the same IQs as their peers. The body preserves every calorie you get, every scrap you get goes to the brain. But, of course, there are people who, you know, some people, they touch weights and they just get ripped. For other people, I'm not one of those people, right? Like, I'll do weights and, you know, I'll get a little bit of muscle here and there, but and so on, right? But I don't get ripped in particular. And, of course, I know a lot of people do steroids and other things to do that. But there are some people that's genetically gifted, right? They just start doing weights. And I remember chatting with a girl when I was on vacation once. She had this fantastic figure. And I'm like, wow, you know, what a fantastic figure you have. You must work out. She's like, no, this is when I don't work out. If I work out, it's insane. And we just had a good old laugh about that and all of that. And it was like, yes, that's pretty pretty wild. So there are some people who are just genetically gifted that way and they just get super muscular. And you really, your body will work to preserve your brain first and foremost. And so if you're still alive, probably your brain is okay. And but so there are some people, they have that potential for super muscularity, but they never go to the gym. And there are some people who have the potential to do very smart things, but don't read, don't think, waste their time on video games and staring at the wall, and or they do drugs and wreck their brains or whatever it is. So just being in possession of a high IQ brain doesn't guarantee that you end up smart at all. In fact, it can really, you can talk yourself into absolutely mountains and cascades and tsunamis of bullshit if you're super intelligent, because you could just live in this world of language and talk yourself in and out of anything, and you float like a hot air balloon above the gravity of the world and your instincts and so on, right? Like people talk about, it's funny, you know, here's how you know if somebody's total full of shit about artificial intelligence. They say, well, you know, artificial intelligence, you're supposed to replicate the human brain, When we can get it to replicate the human brain, it's like, you know, the human brain is only half of the equation, right? You have a second brain in your gut. It's called your gut feeling, your gut instinct. It's incredibly powerful. It's incredibly accurate. It has massive clusters of nerve endings and feedback wired into your spine. You have a second brain. So the idea that artificial intelligence is supposed to replicate your brain is like, no, no, no. That's just half the equation, man. Your gut sense, your gut, your that's, and people who are super smart can just completely detach from that gut instinct. And so I was so thankful, though I never became an actor, I was very thankful for theater school because it really got me to work with the body, with the flesh, with the instincts, with the feelings, with the passions. It's great stuff. It's great stuff. All right. Nutritional deficiency affects IQ. For example, iodine increase in your diet can have up to a 15-point IQ difference. Well, it's like height, as far as I understand it. So, yes, you have deficiencies if you don't get certain things, but it's not like if someone just gets extra iodine, they go up 15 points no matter what. So, also, if your caregiver did a proper job, I don't think you would care to know your biological mother. Yeah, so you hand over your kid to the adopted parents, adoptive parents. If they're doing a great job, what do you really have to offer? If they do a bad job, then your kid's going to be even more mad at you for handing you over to people who were not good parents. I don't see any plus. What's with First Republic Bank crash today? Same thing as SVB? No, it's. I mean, I don't know exactly why, but I assume it's because they've heavily contracted the money supply. So there's going to be some deflationary aspects. And of course, as you know, the Biden administration has almost totally weaponized the US dollar, right? So the US dollar is the world's reserve currency because it wasn't weaponized. It wasn't used to punish political enemies and provide benefits to political friends. It was politically neutral. And the moment you and this started, of course, with Russia, the moment you start punishing countries by taking their stuff and closing their bank accounts and stealing their property and taking their dollars, people are like, oh, whoa, okay, this is no longer a neutral situation. It's not U.S. dollars. It's U.S. dollars now, not as a mechanism of the store of value, but a mechanism of control to the presidency, control to Washington. And people don't want that. They don't want that. So, do you think culture is too unreliable a mechanism for establishing social norms that are conducive to a peaceful and prosperous society? Instead, should we have objective principles to live by, or if we have to default to culture, should we admit that some cultures are better than others? The cultures that are better than others are the cultures that are closer to philosophy. Is a Greek dance better than a Romanian dance? Who cares? Greek culture, from the legacy of Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, you name it, Greek culture is closer to reason than other cultures. The closer the culture gets to philosophy, the more value it has. Not because a culture is better than another, but a culture is closer to the truth. Oh, my gut is telling me we have a rant. Do you want me to answer questions? Or hit a rant? R for rant, Q for questions. R for rant, Q for questions. Oh, it's a good one. Oh, yes, I'm afraid the R's have it. Oh, here it comes. I can't hold it. I can't hold it. All right, here's why I took a hammer to culture. I'll tell you exactly why I took a hammer to culture. It's just come to me, Kramer style, it just came to me right now. Here's why I took a hammer to culture. Why I talked about culture being error. Culture is another word for error. If it's not culture, it's math, it's science, it's facts. It's truth. It's proven. It's not culture that two and two make four. It's not culture that the world is round. It's not culture that the sun is the center of the universe. Culture is everything that is wrong. It's not true. It's a cultural belief means it's not true. Because if it was true, it wouldn't be a culture. A pawn can move forwards one space, except at the beginning when it's two, and it can only use move diagonal to take. That's not culture. It's not a cultural thing. That's the rules of the game. It's the rules of chess. You're not playing that, you're playing some other game. Culture can only survive as a store of values, not value, values. Culture can only survive as a store of values if you don't have other cultures come in. Homogeneous cultures can maintain that because the appearance of universality occurs because there's no contradiction. Nobody coming in and saying, I don't believe it. Everybody believes it. Everybody believes it. And so it feels true because there's unanimity in your environment. Everybody believes it. And of course, when there was less communication, less travel and so on, it was much easier to keep people in that box of culture and pretend that culture was physics, culture was right, culture was truth. Now I come along and I look at culture and I see it being torn apart, shredded and ripped. And attacked by skepticism, by secularism, by materialism, by Darwinianism, by utilitarianism and pragmatism and other religions and other cultures and other beliefs. And they come into this culture, your culture, and they say, well, we believe our culture is absolutely superior and perfect. And you believe that your culture, and you get this multiplicity. And it shatters. It shatters. How you destroy a culture is you bring in other cultures and you resist philosophy. Because philosophy can find what is true and unite people in facts, reason, and evidence. Reality, reality, not fantasy. Not the historical inertia of prior era we call culture. Damn, that's good. So I see a soft swimmer in the water. Sharks, piranhas, barracuda all around it. Nibbling, tearing, biting. The swimmer is screaming. I say, we have to get you out of the water. We have to build a cage. If you stay in the water, you're being torn apart. And Western culture was marked for destruction, as you know. individualistic, rationalistic, free market. It's the most philosophical culture, Western culture, in the past, at least until this generation. The most philosophical culture, which is why it had to go. So you've got the swimmer in the water being torn apart. We can't get rid of the sharks. We can't get rid of the barracuda. We can't get rid of the piranha. I know piranhas are lake fish. Sharks are... There are freshwater sharks in Nicaragua. I know that. I don't know why. I'm not proud of it, but I do. So I saw it all being torn apart. And I'm like, we gotta put some balls and spine in these load-bearing walls because they're crumbling. They're falling down. You got people setting off charges at the basement of the building, and we got to shore this up. We got to build some girder, some structure. We got to find what is true and weld people's belief to what is true. Or to put it another way, because the analogies are coming fast and furious, there are people in a ship being torpedoed by skepticism. Maybe we can patch up the ship. Nope, okay, we've got to get people off the ship, onto lifeboats, get them to land. I came in and I saw a culture, and this includes our religion, could not last. It can't. The absolutism of error can only be sustained if other absolutist errors aren't mixed in. Opposing absolutist errors aren't mixed in. And this is why people who rule over error, when they get invaded, they're pushing back not just the physical invaders, but the undermining of the myths that serve their power, which we called culture. So I was like, well, this ship ain't going to last. This swimmer's in the water going to get torn apart. So I have to find what is true in culture. I have to sandblast away the accumulated cumulus teeth-rotting candy of falsehood, and I've got to get to the core hard skeleton of truth that Western culture is wound in but not defined by. So I'm like, okay, I've got to establish the nature of reality. I've got to establish the nature of sense perception. I've got to establish epistemology, the study of knowledge. I've got to get to ethics. I've got to get to politics. We've got to clean it all away, blow it all away, wipe it all away, all of it, and build from the ground. This is not my approach. This is Descartes. This is even Nietzsche, if you want to look at it in an extremist way. You just wipe it clean. Wipe it clean. Start again. You have it with your kid, you make a painting, you draw a picture of the painting, it gets worse and worse. Rah! Throw it out, start again. Start again. Wipe it clean, start again. Our culture could not last because other cultures had been invited in. And the Christian culture in particular, Christian values, were specifically excluded from schools. You couldn't talk about it. Now, leftist cults come in, that's fine. But the religious foundation in the entire West, got to get rid of that to make room for other cults. Or break room for cults. Christianity is not a cult. So I'm like, okay, the torpedoes, the target, the laser, the sharks in the bathtub, the vector of attack is to disintegrate culture. So my job is to ride in there and rescue from culture what is true and transfer people's beliefs from a ship that can't possibly sustain itself, that is sinking, to get them into a lifeboat and get them to the land called truth, called philosophy, reason, evidence. Because when you're on land, you're pretty much immune from the torpedoes. Torpedoes are sea-based weapon. So I'm like, clear it all away, find the essence of the core of truth. Okay, no murder, no theft, no rape, no assault. That I'm down with. That's got to be what we have to establish. So I work on the introduction to philosophy, one of the first major works that I did. 19 hours straight of here's how we find out the truth. I go from there, I go to, you know, the second essay that I published was Universally Preferable Behavior, or Proving Libertarian Morality, where I laid out the foundations of universally preferable behavior and say, okay, what can we say about virtue that requires no faith at all? Because faith is saying, I desperately need this to be true. I'm going to assume the conditions that make it true so that I can survive. We have to have people not steal. What do we need to assume to be true so that people won't steal? Well, there's a God and he's going to punish you and he's going to reward you and thou shalt not steal and boom, 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 done, right? Okay, fine. What if somebody comes along who doesn't believe in God, huh? What if somebody comes along who says, oh no, see, my God says totally fine for us to steal within our own group or tribe or religion or belief system. Those people outside, don't care about them. We can tell them any lies we want. We can steal from them. We can attack them. We can undermine them. Doesn't matter. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when someone comes along and says, your values, your virtues, everything that your ancestors slaved and died for, everything that you hold dear and that you treasure and that you find necessary for the survival and beautification of your world, spirit, soul, future, and lineage, everything that you believe in and hold dear, what if somebody comes along and says, nah, I don't buy it, man. I don't buy it. I can't buy it. This was my friends when I was, I read about these guys in The God of Atheists. The skeptics, the cynics. You know, my friends would say, yeah, you know, it's a Christianity. It's a great story, man. I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. Okay, what do you say to people like that? Well, you have to buy it because you go to hell. If you don't, nah, I don't believe in hell. But you'll get to go to heaven. Nah, I don't believe in that. What do you do? What do you do? What can you do? Or somebody says, well, in my particular belief system, there's no such thing as hell. And it's all just an analogy and a metaphor. Right? What are you going to do? What if you had a system of ethics, virtue, and truth that you didn't have to abandon or give way in the face of skepticism? That's what UPB is. I can absolutely, completely, and totally prove virtue to you. It's not cultural. It's not religious. It doesn't require you to believe in anything that can't be proven at all. It's absolute, certain, deep, powerful. It's physics, not preference. It's causality, not culture. It's reason, not inertia. It doesn't require you to believe in anything prior to accepting its outcome. That's what I've been up to. That's what I'm all about. If you have physics, you can prove the behavior properties and nature of matter and energy. People don't need to believe anything that you believe ahead of time. They don't need to agree with you about a God or a culture or a history or a country or a patriotism or a culture or any of that. It's inescapable. And making virtue inescapable, because you know it's inescapable in our conscience, deep down in our brain, where the facts get processed no matter what we will or how many lies we tell to each other, the judge, the jury, the executioner is always down there, sharpening his blade, holding out some seed cake, if you get it right. Judging, cold-eyed, always being watched, always being judged. That's your unconscious. That's UPB in your brain. That's the universalization mechanism of your entire thought process is always occurring. Always. Even in your dreams, and maybe even especially in your dreams. Is culture, you say, an unreliable mechanism for establishing social norms? Yes. Yes, it is. We need philosophy. We need science, facts, reason, and evidence. Ah, oh, but you can't get an ought from an is. You just did. Moving on. Done and dusted. Yeah, some cultures are better than others. Those cultures that are closest to philosophy. So why don't we just have a culture called philosophy? Why don't we just have values called truth, reason, evidence, facts, data? I mean, my God, man. Do you know me, one guy, do you know how much I've been right about? One day, I will list it all. But it just goes on and on and on. Yeah, you can't rely. See, culture has a soft flank. Culture has a giant hole in the armor, which is, okay, well, if I don't believe it, what are you going to do? Well, then you need the threats of the state. You need the threats of hell. You need the bullying and ostracism of the crowd. You need mob justice. You need aggression and torture and murder and prisons and demons to threaten and bully and bribe people. And, oh, just do it. You're like a parent who can't explain anything, who offers candy or a beating. No, culture can't survive skepticism. Which is why when you want to destroy culture, you bring in skeptics. Philosophy. Not only can philosophy survive skepticism, philosophy is skepticism. Philosophy requires it, it demands it, it needs it. It's the first question I ask with every show that I'm live streaming. It's the first question. Comments, issues, questions, problems, criticisms, debates, oppositions, you name it. People who disagree with me, top of the line, front of the line, debates, absolutely. Philosophy needs skepticism like life needs sustenance. Culture can't survive skepticism because it's based upon falseness. If it wasn't based on falseness, it wouldn't be culture. It'd be science, facts, reason, evidence, logic, whatever, right? Be truth. Culture cannot survive skepticism. That's why you teach everyone to be skeptical of everything except communism, right? But culture can't survive skepticism. Philosophy, not only can it survive skepticism, it's founded on skepticism. Bring it on, man. Bring on your doubts. Bring out your dead. Bring on your doubts. Bring them, bring them, bring everything that you think, every caustic tsunami of bitter, acidic skepticism, you just crash into this, man. You bring it. You bring that acid. You bring that bile. You bring those stomach juices. You ring them all over the cathedral and statue of philosophy. Bring it. I need it. I want it. I thrive on it. I eat it. I grow strong on skepticism. Because that's the bully that kicks over culture. Why should I believe it? Your ancestors did. Well, I don't care. Why should I believe it? Because it serves your needs. I don't think it does. I don't think that serving, I don't want to have a belief just because it serves my needs. And there's all these people around me, just come in from the Middle East, just come in from Africa, just come in from Russia, wherever. All these people, they don't believe it. Why should I, eeny, meeny, miny, why? If I lived over there, I'd believe what they believe. Right, like when I was 5 years old or however the hell old I was, when that kid came over and said, my soccer team is way better than your soccer team. I'm like, so if I live where you lived, I like that soccer team and you'd like my soccer team. It's just an accident of birth. It's not truth. I'm born here. I believe this. Okay, you can believe it, but it doesn't make it true. Truth is not geographical. Truth is not what you're indoctrinated with as a kid. Truth is what survives skepticism. That's all it is. Take that fire hose, that acidic sandblasting fire hose at every crumbling structure you see. Truth is what's left standing after the fires of skepticism race through the forests of history. And everything that is left standing after the fires of skepticism burn through will stand forever. Will stand whether people believe in it or not, whether they like it or not, whether it pleases them or displeases them, whether they love it or hate it. Everything that survives the fires of skepticism lasts forever. You have burned away the temporal, you've burned away the prejudicial, you've burned away the historical, you've burned away the accidental, you've burned away the geographical, and you have uncovered and revealed the solid silver spine of absolutism and eternity. You have now hooked your mind into that which is infinite and permanent and valid. Culture cannot survive internationalism. It cannot survive diversity. Culture has to get off the sinking ship of history and onto the eternal land and solid structure of philosophy. Ah. Amen. Tell me that ain't worth a tip or two, brothers. Come on, man. Tell me that ain't worth a tip or two, my brothers and sisters. All right. And you were here to see it. You don't get it later. You were here to see it. All right. Jim Cramer says the collapse of First Republic Bank could mark the end of the banking crisis. Inverse Cramer. Yeah, it's not inverse Cramer in my view. He's just telling you to buy things his friends want to sell, that's all. Or he's telling you to sell things his friends want to buy. It's not about you. Just my opinion. What are your thoughts on moving to a new country with young children? Our lovely right-wing Christian conservative government here in Hungary has banned homeschooling and mandated compulsory daycare from the age of 4. Or the year they become 4. Is that right? I'm shocked. And it totally upended our plans in life. Now, if we will have to move a few years after our first child will be born, and it's tough to navigate around that, especially as it will be a whole new culture and language, what can we do to best prepare for that? I am really sorry about that. I'm a little shocked, honestly. Banned homeschooling. Well, do you know what their rationale is for banning homeschooling? I assume that most of the people in Hungary are Christians, and I don't... Are they getting some UN money to ban homeschooling? That would be my first thought. I don't know. You got a couple of years. See where things land. See where things are in a couple of years. If it looks, I mean, if it looks like... I've had to learn other languages, obviously computer languages, but I had to learn how to read and write and translate French for my graduate degree. You just have to start a year or two ahead of time and just start to get into it. Hey, Steph, do you think it's possible for AI to program a sustainable, stable coin on the blockchain? The ones we have are currently not reliable. I don't think I have enough technical expertise to answer that question, but AI can't change the fundamental challenge, which is the more distributed it's going to be, the slower it's going to be. So I don't know how you can change that. I've recently made progress, somebody says, overcoming dissociation from my body using some yoga-esque techniques. Where does philosophy end and bodywork begin with regards to resolving trauma? The answer I have is I need to feel it, but my logical brain doesn't quite like that answer. Thanks. Yeah, so the temptation, to some degree it's called the mind-body dichotomy, but the temptation is for the brain to say, I am the sovereign and you, the mere material body, is dirty and messy and full of bacteria and bowel substance and acid, and it's gross and it fails me and it falls apart and it farts and it shits and it needs sleep and it weakens and ages. And so me, the perfect crystalline platonic form of concepts and ideals, this is the glory and this is the cathedral, and you are just the shitty serfs who have to keep it going, and you work for me and you're my slave and I'm vastly superior to you. And that's all ridiculous and horrible. There's no brain without the body. Why do you think I put so much work into exercising? Well, I want to stay attractive to my wife, but it's good for my brain. What's good for the brain is good for the body. What's good for the body is good for the brain. I was just saying this in my, I did a live stream earlier today, and I was saying, like, one of the reasons I like to walk around, I'll do these ones because the video and I need to read this stuff, but if I'm just doing voice stuff, I'll walk around because I think sometimes better when I'm moving. And people, it's been fairly well studied that people think better when they're moving. Sitting at a desk and thinking is terrible. I always used to say when I'd have a meeting, let's walk. Let's go for a walk and have the meeting. So the mind and the body are one. There's no brain. There's no mind without the brain. There's no brain without the body. The body is not a slave to the mind. The body is a partner. The body is the partner to the brain. The brain has to respect and serve the body. The body has to respect and serve the brain. But one doesn't win over the other. I mean, my thoughts will outlast me. And so will my body. My body will outlast me because I've had a child. My genes will be passed along and mixed in with the general blah, 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 right? So philosophy end and body work begin. There is no philosophy that says philosophy stops here and then it's all the body. You have your gut brain, which is essential to your conscious mind. You have the unconscious, which has been clocked at 8,000 times faster than the conscious mind when it comes to processing. So the mind, the conscious mind, the unconscious mind, the spine, the instincts, the gut, the gut brain, the body as a whole, all of this is one thing. It's one thing and it's all a team. It's all a team. If your conscious mind can't figure something out, your unconscious will kick you an instinct or a story in your dreams, and it will help you. And if you're in a situation of danger, you'll feel anxiety and stress and tension because your gut, which is there to scan for danger, is trying to help you and get you to a position of safety. They're all working together. Explore and embrace all of it. All of it is what it takes for you to be a human being. And please don't ever think that your brain is superior to your body. It's not. It's not. It's a team. It's a teamwork situation. Culture synonymous with art? No. Culture is saying that things are true without explaining why. Art doesn't make an argument that something is true. Art makes an argument that this is what you should pay attention to. That's what art does, right? If you carve a beautiful statue, you're saying, yeah, I know that there's ugliness in the world, but beauty is the most important thing. That's what you should pay attention to, which is why when they want to destroy your culture, they make your environment ugly, ugly buildings and so on, right? So a culture is values. Art is aesthetics. How is your AI presentation going? Any new things you learned that you can share? No, let's wait for the whole presentation. If universality is uniquely human, are cultures that are anti-universality also anti-human? No, there's no culture that's anti-universality. It's skeptical towards outside cultures and has the illusion of certainty for itself. So cultures that are anti-universality always have the anti-universality weapons pointing out. They don't have skepticism in. They're using skepticism to attack other cultures, to dominate them, to erase them, to eliminate them. And yet they retain 100% certainty within themselves. And both, of course, are an illusion. I would love to read a book of what Steph was right about. Hungary has gone woke. Has it really? Well, then there's got to be money coming in from outside, right? That's what they do now, right? They get you addicted to the drug of government money or outside money or subsidies, and then they say, well, we're going to take it away unless you do X, Y, or Z. So they get you used to it, and then they're going to take it away, like a drug addict. Like sometimes you get drugs for free at the beginning, so you get addicted, and then they crank up the prices. Nobody cares about homeschooling here in Hungary. The idea that parents should raise their own kids doesn't even cross anyone's mind. The unknown ideal. Orbán explicitly said that children are public property. Christians here are not like Christians in the West. They tend to be Christian socialists. Oof. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the ownership of children is the building of the future one way or the other. Yes, I think the Pope is starting to recognize gay marriage, right? Do we struggle to move from culture to philosophy because doing so would make it too difficult for the elite class to control society? Culture is the perfect backdoor for the elite class to convince the masses that their way is the right way. Yeah, so culture is the creation of rules and exceptions. And it's only because it's not philosophy do you allow for the exceptions. So culture is creating rules and then creating exceptions for yourself. And the reason you can't move it to philosophy is that philosophy will close off those exceptions. Thou shalt not steal, but I can tax the hell out of you. You can't sign a contract on behalf of someone else, but I can sign a contract on behalf of all of you. You can't steal from the next generation, but through national debt, I can steal through the next generation. Not only can I must. So culture has fuzzy boundaries to the point where you can pretend something is universal while carving out exceptions for yourself. Philosophy closes off those exceptions and say, oh, funny story. If you want something to be universal, if you claim something is universal, you know what it has to kind of be? Kind of has to be universal. So it closes off those loopholes, which the entire purpose of culture is to get the slaves to believe in virtues and then believe the exact opposite for the rulers. Right. People not raising their own children is a special kind of greed disguised as discipline. A stay-at-home mom may be viewed as living on vacation, too much leisure and lack of discipline. Real motherhood is work. Oh, yeah, for sure. Will Bitcoin replace the US dollar, or will the BRICS nation implement a reserve currency and continue the cycle of manipulation and control? I mean, you mean, will Bitcoin replace the US dollar as an international reserve currency? well, I don't. All you have to do is say, does this benefit people in power? If Bitcoin were to become the international reserve currency, would it serve the benefits of those in power? No, of course not, because it can't be counterfeited, it can't be controlled, it can't be deplatformed, it can't be used for a social credit system and so on, right? So, no. Therefore, they will try to work very hard. Generally, I think what's going to happen is they're going to work very hard to come up with their own substitutes. Eventually, they realize there is no substitute, and they will go all in on Bitcoin, because it's the only thing that will allow them to retain money if they can't retain power. All right. Any last questions or comments? Issues. Thank you for a great set of questions and great support. Great support. When you talk about body and mind being a team, I was hanging on to life exactly 1 year ago. While in the hospital recovering, I was listening to your live stream a year ago, plus a few days. You said that we as a community are a team. I just want to sincerely thank you, because your words really helped me in desperately hard times. Chris, that's a beautiful thing to hear. I massively respect what you're saying, and I really, really thank you for that. And I hope everyone here and everyone listening and everyone in particular who supported this show, because it can't run on fumes, it can't run on air, it can't run on my carbon dioxide or my charisma. It needs money, right? I mean, this is the world we live in. So everyone take a victory lap. Everyone take a bow. And you all saved Chris. We all together helped really save Chris. And I think that's wonderful. This makes it all worthwhile. And I'm willing to burn my reputation to ash for these kinds of stories. And I'm happy to have done so. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. Will all elite classes always aim to control society? Well, sure, as long as there's great profit in control. But you see, don't look at the citizens as victims. Don't look at the citizens as mere victims. You see, people want to control their children. And because they want to control their children, they can't say much about being controlled by others. The state grows out of the family. The state is an effect or a shadow cast by the family. As long as people want to bully and control their own children, they will be bullied and controlled by the elites. They're not victims. They're willing to sell their freedoms to the elites in order to bully and control their children. Don't view people as victims. Oh, these poor people, they're getting caught up in these big movements, and oh my gosh, there's Agenda 2030 and people are going to be swept up and controlled. It's like, hey man, if you're willing to give up power over others, you can puncture these delusions in the people around you like that. This is what I say. It's what I'm saying. Give up power over others. Give up power over others. Give up control over others. Don't try and bully. Don't scare them. Don't bribe them. Don't bully them. Don't hit them. Don't yell at them. Don't attack them for not doing what you want. Give up. Give up your needs, your poison seeds, as the song goes. Yeah, give up control over others. Give up your desire, your thirst to control others. Have you ever seen me try to control another human being in the 17 years I've been doing this? Have you ever once seen me try to control and bully another human being despite thousands of conversations, published conversations? Have you ever heard or seen me try to control someone or bully them? Give up control. Give up the thirst and desire for control. That's how Satan gets in. That's how the devil takes your soul. The reason why people can't give up their belief in the state is they can't give up their control over their children. They won't do it. They won't do it. And the price of controlling your children is being controlled by the state. The price of betraying your children is being betrayed by the state. It's just how it is, man. You can't fight what you embody. Maybe this is why philosophy is so important, because a free mind is the hardest thing to control. This is how we beat the elites. Yeah, you're still looking at this like beating people. I don't look at it that way. I don't look at it that way. Just stop believing in the value of control. Stop believing in the virtue of violence. Drop the sword. Walk away. Stop believing in the virtue of violence. The initiation of force. Be free. And then you can inspire people to follow your example. If you're not free, you want to beat the elites. Okay, then you're entering into an arena that they control. You got to walk away. I think. That's my approach. I mean, the elites control, why do they control the schools? They control the currency. They control the media. Come on. They can provoke a war against nuclear armed powers. You think they'll have any trouble with you or I? I don't think so. Alice Miller wrote a great chapter in her book about Hitler and his childhood and how people may have supported him. Do you have criticisms of her approach? Seems like people are quick to question government, not question parents. It's been a long time since I read the drama of The Gifted Child, and I was very influenced by Ominous Parallels by Leonard Peikoff as well, with the rise of Nazism. Is there a way to love those who are still convinced of the state instead of walking away? Well, those who are still statists, they want you thrown in jail for disagreeing with them. Can you love people who want violence used against you for disagreeing with them? See, philosophy is great because when you ask questions the right way, you don't even have to answer them because the answers are obvious. Oh, is it from For Your Own Good by Alice Miller? Okay. Yeah, you look him in the eye and you say, well, you say, do you want me thrown in jail for disagreeing with you? Am I allowed to be free and disagree with you? You can disagree with me. Like, I don't think the welfare state is healthy or productive or moral. But if you want to give money to people, I obviously wouldn't want you thrown in jail for that. Am I allowed to disagree with you and want a private solution without you wanting me thrown in jail? What is the right way to ask questions philosophically? Well, it depends. It depends. It depends on the person. Some people respond to Socratic reasoning. Some people need to be led. I can't answer, right? Some people, they just find the Socratic questioning annoying, and it's like, just tell me the answer. Okay, then tell them the answer, and then tell them how you got there. Some people, if they're really wed to, some people who are like more chaotic and more confused, they just want the answer because they're not wedded to a false answer. They're just generally confused and propagandized, and I say this with all sympathy. But people who are heavily invested in the wrong answers, they generally respond better to Socratic reasoning, if they're going to respond at all. Most times they won't. They'll just double down. All right. If the majority of people act only because of incentives, how do they become people who act from philosophy, which is long-term, maybe even faith-based incentives? No, not faith-based incentives. People react because of incentives. I can tell you. You won't like it. I'll tell you. It's okay. I'm not here to be liked. I'm here to be right. So, from 1 to 100, how many anti-rational people do I have in my life? My personal life? Oh, my business life too. How many anti-rational people do I have? How many statists do I have in my life? Zero. Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, zero. People respond to incentives. And if people are anti-rational, want me thrown in jail for disagreeing with them, they're not in my life. There's an incentive. Now, if they don't care about me enough that doesn't really matter to them, or they're willing, they want to choose error. No, they don't pay taxes, not in my life. So if people would rather be wrong and immoral than spend time with me, that's up to them, right? Then they're going to have to learn not through reason, but through bitter experience. But doesn't it help to have a few? No. I really want people in my life who oppose my values. And oppose rational, virtuous values. That's my incentive, is the pleasure of my company. I'm a really fun guy to hang with. I'm a good conversationalist. I'm funny and I'm engaging. And so if people don't want to spend time with me, they certainly don't have to. But I'm not going to spend time with them if they oppose my values. Or oppose reason, oppose evidence, or oppose facts, oppose virtue. Of course not, right? Of course not. So yeah, people do respond to incentives. And me not wanting to enable or spend time with or praise people who are immoral, that's out of residual affection, right? I don't praise people who are doing bad things. Because if you give them the pleasure of your company, even while they're anti-rational, what incentive do they have for change? The only chance that people have to do better is if you stop supporting their bad decisions. Stop enabling the addict. Maybe they hit rock bottom. Maybe they change. Maybe they don't have to hit rock bottom. Maybe they just miss you. But if people aren't Like, I don't have fake relationships. I don't have false relationships, right? So if people don't even care about me enough to reject violence against me, nah. I find out how much people care about. Do they care about their bullshit ideology, or do they care about your actual reasoned arguments and moral self? Do they care about you? I don't like that kind of fake stuff in my life. So, all right. Any last comments or any last donations to keep the old ship of free domain floating along down the stream of time? And listen, I'm aware this is supporters only, so you guys have already supported, and I thank you for that enormously. If, you know, if you'd ordered a great meal and there's a little tip, I appreciate that. If you would like to help out, if you're listening to this later, of course, freedomain.com/donate. I would really appreciate that. When do you usually do the Telegram chats? I'm afraid that's a little random. I would try and set up a more regular schedule, but it's kind of random. If something happens where something in my day opens up, then I will sometimes jump on it, but I don't have. And Telegram is tough, right? I like the voice aspect of Telegram, but I can't get tipped. So it's better for conversations, but it's not better for the income that I have the responsibility to generate for the show. So it's, you know, it's a trade-off, as usually things are in life as a whole. Yeah, just stay on, and I'll usually try and give some warning. I'll usually know an hour or two ahead of time, and I'll usually try and give some warning. All right. Are goals the same as incentives? No, I don't think so. Thank you, Chris. I really, really appreciate that. And listen, congratulations on getting out of a dark place to a better place. That is fantastic. That is fantastic. Our goals are the same as incentives. Are you still doing your documentaries? Well, it's been a little tough to travel, so not so much, but I hope to get some. I hope to get at least one in this year. But it requires do one on ducks. My daughter would be absolutely thrilled. I'm not sure how philosophical that would be, but my daughter would be pretty thrilled. All right. Do we owe customers an explanation why we don't want to work for them? We do not. We do not. I thought COVID restrictions over in CCP land. And I'd want to do a documentary in the States. You know, America is so restricting entry. If you are not an American citizen and you are unvaccinated, as far as I know, you can't get in. Maybe that will change. Will you share any thoughts on the coronation of a new king in Britain? No, don't really care. He's a woke douchebag, as far as I know. So it's pretty wretched. All right, guys, thank you so much for a wonderful evening's conversation. Mwah. Thank you for bringing out the best in me, as always. Have yourself a great evening. Lots of love. I will talk to you this weekend. And thanks again, guys. You make it all worthwhile and you make it all possible. And all the good we're doing in the world, we should all take a giant freaking bow. Lots of love. Take care, guys. Bye.